Now, good morning, sir. How are we?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me, Jess.
Well, thank you so much for coming in this morning as well. Now, for people out there who don't know you or who, unlike myself, have not met you 10 minutes ago, explain to us what sort of physical disability you have, what you deal with on a daily basis.
Sure. So I have cerebral palsy. So basically, I was born 2 months premature.
Wow.
And I did die twice at childbirth.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Your poor mother, too. Mm. That would have been such a horrible time for your parents.
It was.
So that's left you as a wheelchair user for your life. Yes. Okay. Growing up, what barriers did you find you had to overcome that you had to kind of move through that maybe other kids didn't have to?
Plenty. Well, I was one of the first students to be integrated into mainstream schooling at a very young age in Australia, really, or at least New South Wales. And there was a lot of barriers to overcome there and a lot of changing of opinion to do around that. So my parents really fought for that. Really hard.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can imagine your parents would have been a huge part of your upbringing, and they're a part of everyone's upbringing. To have good parents who fight for you is just such an incredible thing that that kids need as well. I understand too, I was reading this morning that you were one of the first scout troop leaders to all scout members to lead a troop, an able-bodied troop, as a disabled person. Is that right as well?
I was.
That's it. You were just like smashing it left, right, and center. From like the youngest age, I feel like you've just been breaking down so many barriers, breaking down so many misconceptions. Was there a major turning point in your life where you thought, I have to change these misconceptions people have? I have to really start this conversation. Was there a point that you found yourself having that kind of moment?
I think it's pretty ongoing. There's always new people to meet that, you know, that I need to educate. So it's something that I've been happy to, you know, take on my entire life.
Absolutely. What are some of the biggest misconceptions you feel people have?
I think that, as you said, that people with disabilities aren't necessarily valuable contributors to, you know, public life.
Absolutely. And it's such an unfortunate misconception because I've never met a person with a physical or intellectual disability who hasn't been an incredible human and just a lovely person as well. They're people. Everyone's a person with a story and value in society. And that's, I think, the biggest barrier that we're facing these days. Now, you are the co-founder and chief operating officer of Neuroimmersive. It's a VR startup. Tell us about that. How did that come about? What are you guys trying to achieve?
Yeah, so first of all, we at Neuroimmersive, we offer immersive, engaging, and fun brain rehabilitation for, at this point in time, stroke and brain trauma survivors.
Wow. So what does that entail? What sort of virtual reality experiences are you giving these people?
So basically, they are gamified experiences which mimic daily task activity. You might be in the bathroom or a kitchen, you know, going around doing your daily, relearning daily living tasks, but in a gamified environment.
Do you find people respond more to that gamified environment because it is a bit more fun and the consequences, maybe people think the stakes aren't as high?
Well, definitely, there's a lot of research to show that the VR really does amazing things for rehabilitation, because it creates like a dopamine response in the brain.
Okay.
Which means that people are far more likely to complete their rehab. Traditional rehab is really boring and repetitive and not compelling at all. So people I think there's something like 48% of people don't comply with the therapy because they just get too bored.
It's dull.
Doing it. Yeah.
I guess sitting in like a room with four walls doing something over and over again.
Exactly.
And if you make it fun, that dopamine response. Yeah. But I can imagine, see, when I think of VR, I think of like young boys sitting in a room doing gun games and that's it. But when we have really practical uses for this and we have really real world uses for this, I think that's where we start getting to the cool side of VR. How many people have you had engage in the program so far? What's the response been like?
So one of our co-founders, Rowan O'Reilly, actually has a clinic up in Newcastle, and he's been running therapy using VR for about 2 years and been getting amazing results with his patients. So, we've got a lot of reason to believe that, you know, we're onto something quite special.
Is there any plans to move it beyond stroke victims of, like, brain trauma?
Definitely. We see potential in all kinds of neuro-related disorders, so Parkinson's.
Oh, wow.
Even to some extent, cerebral palsy as well, because just the dopamine response that this therapy allows means that if everyone wants to do therapy and wants to improve.
Yeah. Well, if it's playing video games for a couple of hours,
you know,
but people are going to be way more keen to get on board. Yeah. It's going to be so much more fun for people. Was it your background in animation that drew you towards this? Was it that kind of desire to create?
Definitely. And so for 5 years now, I've also run a digital content and virtual reality, augmented reality studio.
Mm.
So we create content for corporate clients, mainly in business, consulting, retail, that kind of thing. So it was just, it was actually quite serendipitous that I met our co-founder who had been sort of pioneering this technology. So he was looking for someone to produce the VR content, which was our other co-founder Ansel and I's experience.
Mm.
So we had really complementary skills.
Having been in VR and animation for as long as you have, were you surprised by its applications? Were you surprised that it could be used in this way when you were approached to create the VR side of things? Or was it kind of a natural progression?
Well, I think we always knew that the technology was constantly improving and evolving, and it was not going to be long before VR and, you know, what we call extended reality, so really any, you know, augmented reality, virtual reality, would become a lot. There would be a lot more applications for this technology beyond gaming, I think. Everything starts with gaming.
It does, doesn't it?
but there's so many more practical uses for it.
Absolutely. I think if we can take, as I said before, VR, which everyone thinks of as teenage boys sitting in their room playing gun games, and that's, you know, a big part of what it's used for. Lightsabers at the moment is the new thing that VR's going crazy with, and we give it really practical applications. We give it real-world applications that are going to help people. Like, it just excites me beyond the recognition, because it is such a cool way to use the technology. So what's next for you? Where do you see yourself going in the next couple of years? Is it continuing along the neuroimmersive round? Is it continuing more with the challenging conceptions of people with disabilities? Is it both? Where do you see yourself going?
I've always taken the approach in terms of challenging people's misconceptions of just getting out there and doing it.
Yeah.
and really just integrating myself as much as possible into, you know, for me, entrepreneurship and you know, business.
Lead by example.
Exactly. And really, people tend to forget, start to forget that I have a disability, and it's just not a factor anymore.
No, because you do amazing work. You're doing incredible things to help people. You're a great human being, and that's all that really matters.
Exactly.
Oliver, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.